Now
hey,
recording.
Hey, Craig, how's it going? Okay, guys, I was saving this for the banter. Had a probably one of the most bizarre experiences of my life yesterday. Have either of you ever participated in a sleep study before?
No.
Did you?
I'm intrigued.
I did. So I did the sleep study because I've been having a whale of a time sleeping. Like, I just, for whatever reason, so like I go to bed and I wake up, and I really don't have any issue like staying asleep, but I just wake up and I do not feel well rested at all. And so I'm trying to get to the bottom of it. There's a place in Burnsville that does sleep studies. And I'm gonna drop these photos in the group chat right now. They had approximately 30 different nodes hooked up at various places throughout my body. I had like probably like 10 or 15 on my face and my head, a bunch on my my legs, chest.
Oh my god.
You look like you are taking a selfie from a bed after you've just been in like a helicopter crash.
Yeah, I was gonna say hit by a car.
Right, yeah. So I show up to this place and it's like in kind of like, have you ever been to like a fancy suburban strip mall? Like, I'm thinking like you'd see these places specifically in like Eden Prairie
the
or Gallery
is in Edina.
Yeah.
No, not that fancy. But like,
oh, okay.
It's like individual units, like an individual. Fancy. Yeah, like a strip mall, but that's like a fancier, more recently built strip mall.
A new strip mall.
Yeah. Anyway, it was like tucked back in this residential neighborhood. So already was feeling kind of weird. I go in at 8:15 p.m. So it's middle of the night. There's just one like sleep specialist there and then some other dude who's also getting a sleep study. I check in and she's like, yeah, first patient beat you here. So go ahead, go into the room, get changed into your pajamas. I'll be in like 30 minutes. I'm like, okay, cool. Sounds good. So walk in and imagine like a 2008 or 2009 Marriott hotel room. It's nice.
What am I supposed to do with that information?
Oh, I have an exact picture in my head. I have an exact picture in my head. Yeah.
Like I was picturing, and once again, I had no idea what was going on, or what was going into it. I was picturing like a laboratory setting, like white sterile wall, almost like a hospital room almost.
Yeah.
But no, it was like, I don't know, like a 15-year-old hotel room. So not like overly nice, but also kind of comfy. It had green walls and everything, had a fireplace, a TV with cable. And so so I change into my pajamas, sitting on this bed, just kind of sitting around waiting. And this person finally comes in. He's like, all right, you're ready to get hooked up? I'm like, yeah, sure. Has just like this gelatinous stuff that helps the node stick, just like globbed it all over my head and my chin in my hair. I spent about a half hour this morning in the shower just trying to get all the gel out of my hair. And I don't know if you can see it in the first picture, the one where you can like see the wired box. There are like 30 wired. I've got like this thing wrapped around my neck.
Yeah.
And so finally gets me all hooked up. I'm just kind of like, I feel really stiff with this thing on. She's like, okay, well, I'm going to, it was by this point, it was like 9:30 at night and you're supposed to follow kind of your regular sleep schedule. And I usually don't go to sleep until like 10:30 or 11. So I just had to like chill for like an hour. And she's like, so yeah, just sit here. I'll be back in an hour to tuck you in. I'm like, interesting phrasing, but okay. Yeah, so I'm just sitting there. I have no idea what to do. I brought my Switch. I didn't play anything. Watched an episode of Star Wars, The Bad Batch, because like, I don't know what else to do. and then she comes in. It's like 10:30 finally. And she's like, okay, you ready to go to bed? I'm like, I guess I have to be.
Yeah.
So
you're being tucked in now. You gotta go to sleep.
Yeah. And so I get laid down in the bed and she's like standing kind of over me. Like getting everything else plugged in. Also had me try on a CPAP mask just in case I needed that. It's not really relevant. But then she's like, okay, well, if you need anything, just talk. because the room is being video and audio recorded, because they obviously need to see, they need to monitor me. But it's like, yeah, if you need to get up in the middle of the night for the bathroom or anything, just say something and I'll be in. I'm like, oh, this is weird. I don't like this. And so obviously I was having a hard time getting comfortable going to sleep. And finally, probably around like midnight, I finally, you know, kind of doze off into a light sleep and then wake up about a half hour later because I had a nightmare, which I usually never do, but just being in this scenario, and no one came in or anything. I'm like, okay, fine. So I tried to go back to sleep, woke up in the middle of the night again because I got really hot. And so I just like, I woke up intentionally, just like very quietly moved the blankets off of me. So I just had a sheet on top. And then she runs in kind of like panicked. She's like, is everything okay? I'm like, yeah, I just woke up in the middle of the night and I was kind of warm. It's like, oh, okay, cool. Night. I'm like, night.
What?
And then I had also a blood oxygen level monitor on my finger. And apparently like that, it went on to like the first knuckle and it like slipped ever so slightly up that way twice. And she had to come in to fix that. And then she was also telling me that she was adjusting that. It's like, yeah, you know, if anything else like pops off or slides off while you're sleeping, I'll just come in and fix it for you. I won't wake you up. I'm like, I think I'd prefer you do wake me up there. And then, so finally I sleep through the night. The worst part was they got me up at 5:55 this morning. And I thought there was gonna be like an exit thing. But no, nurse comes in, wakes me up at 5:55. It was like, great. You'll get results in, you know, a week at your follow-up. Get out. I'm like, oh, cool. So
get the hell out of here. We're done having you in our room.
She didn't actually say get up. It was like, yep, you're free to go. Just pack up your stuff and you can head on. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So packed up all my stuff and walked out of this place at like 6 a.m. Didn't say hi to anybody. Didn't meet the other guy, which honestly I think was probably good, but
yeah.
What are you in
weird
for?
Just bizarre. It's, just a bizarre so, experience.
So I guess my main question hearing that story is, do you trust the results you're about to get back, considering how little you actually slept?
I think I slept enough for them to measure, because the purpose of the sleep study is to figure out if there's anything abnormal going on while you're sleeping. And so,
gotcha.
Like everything on my, they're monitoring like my brain, my breathing, my heart, my lungs, my throat. So they could check for everything from, you know, sleep apnea, which is kind of the most common problem they deal with, to any like a thyroid issue. Also, random fact, is it weird that sometimes I thought when people were talking about thyroids, I thought people had butt issues because I was confusing thyroids with hemorrhoids?
I still to this day don't really know where the thyroid is or
nobody
what
does.
Thyroid
okay,
is
that's what I thought.
It's a butterfly shaped gland in your neck. That releases different chemicals, the thyroid chemical that does. And apparently either if you have too much or too little of it, that can cause everything from like disrupted sleep to acid reflux to other things. So
I didn't like knowing it was there, and I'm going to do my best to forget that it's there. And
to that's
live
why
in continual, I like to think that all my glands are far beneath the surface, deep inside somewhere.
They're all tucked in like a little box in your butt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a little gland box.
You learn so much here on the Q4 podcast.
Exactly. It's a
you
science.
You learn what a science study is.
As I've said many times before, this is a Renaissance podcast. It is the true everyman podcast. You get everything and a side of sports.
When you sign on to listen to the Q4 podcast, you know you're going to learn.
What are you going to learn? We don't know, but you're going to learn something.
We're going to find out.
Will the thing you learn be true?
No.
We don't know.
Probably not.
Probably very dubious at best.
TJ, you seem like a caffeine guy. I feel like from college,
what
I remember.
What would make you ever think that right. I appreciate the benefits of the, we'll call it low-grade narcotic that is caffeine?
I think maybe just the myriad different types of Mountain Dew that would show up during every single one of our work shifts that we ever worked together.
Yeah, that was probably a good line.
There have been hangouts that TJ and I have done where, like, for literally for an hour, we've just gone through and have tried to figure out what, like, all the kinds of Mountain Dew that there have been.
And dude, which ones I haven't tried. And there aren't very many.
There are so many more now. Like, it's insane. So many more.
I remember growing up, sweet, innocent little Noah, just thinking it was Mountain Dew, Mountain Dew Code Red, and Mountain Dew Livewire. Those are the three Mountain Dews.
It's the OGs.
Yeah, but then. Yeah. And then if you go to Taco Bell, you get Baja Blast.
Of course.
See, but then there's I didn't find out about Baja Blast until I was literally in college.
What?
It didn't migrate up far enough north for you?
I did not go to Taco Bell. Like, there wasn't one. There was a Taco John's in St. Cloud. The other one, like, the closest Taco Bell was 40 minutes away. When you're getting Taco Bell, you're there for the convenience
of
a $1 taco.
Not a 45-minute
drive. I'm not driving 2 hours round trip for Taco Bell. I'm sorry.
No, that's fair. Correct choice.
But.
And here we are talking about food again.
Here we go. Welcome to the Q4 podcast, your favorite sleep food science podcast. That occasionally also delves into sports.
That's correct.
Welcome.
Dude, it's been a big week of, like, there's been a lot of nothing, like, I don't know how to say this. A lot of things happening, but not, like, major things happening.
A lot of things, I think this is the, week. I know that I mentioned Q1 was going to be hockey. I'm just going to hit that real quick, and then I'm going to get into your whole lot of nothing, because the first week of the NFL league season can be best described as a whole lot of nothing. Because there's a lot happening, but it's happening because nothing is happening.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So I'm going to hockey first, because I just want to hit... The last episode we had, excuse the noise, I'm going to adjust my mic.
No noise at all.
Didn't even hear it.
The tangent sound is like,
Shock
Mount is doing beautiful.
The last episode, I mentioned how the Wilds were coming into the trade deadline and that they needed to make some moves. And that there was one guy on the team who specifically wanted to be moved, Mr. Dumba. The trade deadline has passed. Dumba is still on the team. The Wild made several moves, none of which involved him. And I can confidently say that after the trade deadline, the Wild were neither better nor worse than they were. They were just different than when they started.
I know Christian
has opinions about this. I'm going to finish what I'm saying before you start.
All right.
Because I'm just... The Wilds are the hottest team in hockey. Until today, when Kirill Kaprizov is now supposed to be out for 3 to 4 weeks because he did a split while a 200-pound man landed on top of him. It was ugly. It was not a good thing that happened to our good old Kirill the Thrill. The Wilds are on the brink of the playoffs. They are 10 points ahead of the third-place team in the Central, which means they probably have a comfortable way into the playoffs, even with Kaprizov out. They are on their way to another goalie controversy because, once again, they have two starting caliber goalies, both of whom want to start as often as possible, and both of whom are playing their career best. This is one of his best seasons, and the Wild are good. All right. They made trades for people who are fine, I suppose. The best acquisition they got is a guy who does not have a timetable for his return, and he's on a rental contract till the end of the season. So there's the risk there that they literally don't get anything out of him.
If he comes back, he can be
Don't give me the if he comes back.
Taking a gamble. It's a low risk gamble. The Gustav Nyquist trade is a low risk gamble.
But I'm fine with low risk gambles normally. Right now, the Wild are a team that they just need a little bit more to get there, and they didn't get a little bit more. They got just different.
But did you really think that after their first move being just retaining half of Ryan O'Reilly's salary to get a draft 2 years now. Like, do you really think that after that was the first move they made, they would actually go all in and make a all-in kind of move?
I didn't think so, but I wanted it to be true. And the fact that it wasn't true, while they still traded for four players, all of whom are fine, I guess. One of them is a former Wild player. Who's back?
And John Klingberg is a decent D-man.
They're all fine.
And Oscar Sundquist.
But that's maybe the problem.
Oscar Sundquist is a physical presence. He can throw hits around. He can lay down the law.
He is, and he is also, say it with me, fine. He is fine.
And all three of those guys have playoff experience too. That matters.
And they're all fine. Like, I don't have a problem with any of them. I'm upset mainly because I look at this team and I'm like, it's not better. It's just different. It's just a completely lateral move. And when a team makes trades for four guys at the trade deadline, you would expect them to change positively or negatively in some form.
But I guess if we had done this show, say, yesterday, before the Kirill Kaprizov injury happened, they're playing some of the best hockey in the NHL.
They're playing some of the best hockey in the NHL that they were also playing before the trade deadline.
So the thing is, if they're one of the best teams in the last couple of weeks, and, you know, obviously the Kirill Kaprizov injury affects the outlook a little bit, but I don't know. They're playing good hockey, so I don't
they're
know
not
like, what
playing good hockey. Their goalies and defense are playing. They won last night 4-2 against the Winnipeg Jets. The Winnipeg Jets outshot them 48-23.
It's a high conversion rate, though.
You can't just keep doing that. They've been riding the hot hand, but you're gonna have to get some form of act. Like, I don't know what their goalie was doing last night. He was out of it. The offensive improvement was minimal at best, and now Kirill is hurt, and we're gonna watch Ryan Hartman
is. As the team stands, they made a lateral move as diagnosed by you, TJ. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Cap space was negative just from the retainment of random people's salaries, just because they decided to. Okay. Which not really a super big deal because they had a ton of space anyway.
Yeah.
So, and then third, potential. Does the potential increase at all with these acquisitions?
Most of them are guys who are at the end of their contract. So it's like if they don't, they're rentals. If they don't make the end of the season, they're free agents and they're going to go get big paydays somewhere.
Which
probably not here.
Theoretically would mean that it's investment for this season, right?
But here's
they're just not good enough to.
Well, they're
to
just not
that.
Good enough to do that. And also, if you're like, well, these are guys we want for the long term, you can do that in free agency.
Yeah.
Because if they're not going to make an immediate impact and take you to the Stanley Cup, and you're going to have to go after them in free agency anyways, I don't know why you bother sending two draft picks away.
Yeah.
To take them.
And I think that's, and I think maybe what you're getting at, TJ, is that, you know, it's kind of like what we talked about in the last show. It being in this middle area of the competitive spectrum is just, it's kind of an uneasy place to be, because, you know, you could be like the Boston Bruins, be all in on trying to win a championship this year, trade away future draft picks and prospects to get good players to win now. Or you can be a team like the St. Louis Blues that are not going anywhere this year, sold off their top pieces, got capital for draft capital and prospects for next year and years beyond. And here's the Wild just kind of sitting in between, where we don't want to go all in because we don't really believe in this team that much, but we also are good enough where we're not going to sell everything off.
It's probably the worst. Is the worst thing that could have happened, or is the worst thing that is happening, the fact that the Wild are the hottest team in hockey right now? Like, do you know what I mean? Because there's just this false sense of hope that we're not going to lose in the first round of the playoffs.
The worst thing is that they're the hottest team in hockey. They were so before the trade deadline. And nothing meaningful statistically has changed from before. There, Kirill Kaprizov has been responsible for 20% of the goals the Wild have scored this season.
Okay. So we need to find 20% of goals.
We need to find 20% of the goals.
We're already like battening down the hatches.
And they
getting outshot 2-1.
20% of the goals on one of the lowest scoring teams in the league this season. This
sounds
next
like a recipe
month
for success.
This next month, this ramp up to the Stanley Cup playoffs. By the way, if you Google Stanley Cup, there's a lot of cup brands that are calling their cups Stanley Cups now, which is really bothersome.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to figure out, I was like, oh, when did the Stanley Cup playoffs start? Google Stanley Cup. I had to scroll to like page 2. Anyway, this month is going to be rough, is where we're getting at here. It's going to be a rough time to be a Wild fan, because we're going to be getting into the eighth seed, prepping up to play out Colorado, maybe.
It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Okay. Never has, never will.
Okay, perfect.
Wild, Twins, Timberwolves.
At least the Wild sometimes win a game in the first round.
They do sometimes win a game in the first round. They haven't won the first round in their they went on one of the years.
Like when I was like in high school, I think, or I might have even been younger than that, because I remember watching them playing Colorado.
Awesome.
But then they lost to Colorado. So
yeah. So anyways, I figured that if the Wild made 4 trades in the trade deadline, I thought I'd be happy about it, and I feel very mediocre. And now with Mr. The Thrill out, I am feeling even less. Less thrilled.
It could. Would you? I mean, it's better to be here than selling everything, right?
I'd much rather be here than be the Blues. Absolutely, 110%.
So, like, fair. You know, all things considered, it's not the worst thing that could have.
You're not like Blues fans who are talking about just. It's the hashtag suck hard for Bedard sweepstakes.
I don't like that.
Hashtag tank.
That's not going to be. Hashtag suck hard for Bedard is not going to be. Bedard is not going to be an official Q4.
We're not doing that one.
Oh, no. No. We don't want that.
No.
When do the playoffs start, TJ?
April. So we're about. Anytime in the 3 to 4 month timeline, beginning of April. I think it's April 11th. The 3 to 4 week timeline for Kirill's return lines up real nicely with the beginning of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And
okay.
All I know,
Lundqvist, is that his name?
That sounds right.
A hurt guy who we traded for
Nyquist
and Lundqvist are two guys that we traded for.
Those are the same thing.
he doesn't have a timetable for return. He's been hurt since January.
We traded for Sundqvist and Nyquist. You said Lundqvist. Sundqvist and Nyquist. There we go.
One of them has a V. One of them, I think it's Sundqvist. Not Quist, Kvist.
Does it matter?
I saw an, The Athletic had an article about how
Oscar Sundqvist.
I think about Sundqvist. How Bill Guerin is intentionally trying to unite all of the Swedish players on one team. Like that's actually one of his goals.
The wild social media the wild social media team actually posted a video of Bill Guerin calling John Klingberg when he was going to tell them they acquired him, and that's one thing he says, like, we, you know, with you on our team now, half our team is Swedish. We're trying to get all the Swedes together.
Hey, welcome to Minnesota, man. If there's any place for the Swedes to be,
it's true.
It's here. Speaking of people who are not going to be here anymore,
may I kick off our football segment with
the game? I was going to say that the league year has started, and a whole lot of nothing in the terms of contracts signed by pending free agents.
This is a return. It's a return of a recent favorite game of ours.
Ah, Q4 favorite, a classic.
With a little twist. So I was listening to a podcast a little bit later, a Cowboys podcast, and they were talking about all the Cowboys pending free agents, and it's a lot. It's a lot, and it's a lot of big names. And trying to figure out who they think the Cowboys should keep. And so they had three options: either make them a top priority, make them a nice to have, or let them walk. So I figured we could bring back Keeper Yeet this time for the Vikings. And we're not going to do the Vikings right now have 16 unrestricted free agents.
That's so many.
We won't go through all of them because I quit in Madden.
I'm done in Madden because I don't understand this process anymore.
Yeah. That's why you just go into like the individual player and just always reset their contract back to year one. So you just don't have to deal with it. So there's 16. We won't deal with all of them because some of them, such as Chris Boyd, Oli Udo, Ben Ellefson, Andrew DePaola, special teamers, backups. I found seven who I think are key contributors or who were key contributors last year. You all have to decide individually. Do you think, what would you do if you were the Vikings? Top priority, nice to have, or let them walk? And then what do you think the Vikings are going to do?
That sounds like a lot of work.
I gotta pull up the cap space just to see as well.
Oh, it's not a fun number.
That's the fun part about this all is too, Noah, is that we're gonna talk about all these players and even after releasing Eric Kendricks this week, there's still what, like $19 million over the cap, something like
Stop
that.
Stop it, Christian.
I'm just saying.
I don't want to hear.
More players gotta go.
We're gonna have to sign Justin Jefferson for like a record contract. Yeah. We're good. Yeah, we're good. Right. We're in good shape.
All right, kicking off the list, we'll start with defensive tackle Dalvin Tomlinson, 29 years old, was paid $10.5 million in 2022.
Oh, dude, you got to keep him. Depending on what happens with Za'Darius Smith, whether they cut him, release him, trade him, I mean, you can't. The defensive line with Danielle Hunter was one of the, I guess, quote unquote, not super bad parts of our defense last year. And Dalvin Tomlinson was a decent run stuffer. I just feel like, you know, if you're not going to replace him in the draft or I don't know if you're going to find anyone like him on the free agent market. So I feel like even though he might be one of the more expensive guys, I feel like you've got to keep him.
I would keep for similar reasons and because of my answer for Za'Darius Smith later.
Oh no. I would say keep just he's a very solid interior defensive lineman. But here's the other thing that we have to consider here. We are running into a season where we do not know what the defense is going to look like in terms of scheme, in terms of coaching personnel, and in terms of people on the defense. There are so many question marks here that I don't even know what, like, are we doing a 4-3, 3-4, 1-5-5? Like, what's happening?
Didn't Brian Flores in his introductory press conference say, like, they're still sticking with a base 3-4 defense, but the game plan will be adjusted game by game based on the opponent?
I saw something similar to that as well.
If that's the case, then do we keep Dalvin Tomlinson when in a 3-4 do you need to pay a very expensive run-stuffing defensive tackle, or do you try to get something a little cheaper and benefit from your edge rushers?
That's a good question. Without a linebacker, too.
Just because he's really good, but...
I think if you look at some of the top teams, particularly in the NFC, what separates them is they have a good run game. They have a great run game. I'm thinking about teams such as the Eagles, such as the Niners, where not only do they have solid quarterback play, varying, Brock Purdy or Jalen Hurts, but then you also have really good running as well, Christian McCaffrey, Jalen Hurts, and having a run-stuffing defensive tackle is very important. But, like you said, should that be the top priority for the Vikings? I think
A team with no cornerbacks, no linebackers, and a safety who is 314 years old.
I think Dalvin Tomlinson is a nice to have, but if push comes to shove, yeet.
This is one of the things about keeper yeet. All right. I'm going to say, I don't feel good yeeting Dalvin Tomlinson. I don't feel good about it.
That's not part of the
game.
You
don't have to feel good about it. People will be yeeted this season. People are always yeeted. So it's just making the tough decisions.
It is yeet or be yeeten in this world. But at the same time, I don't feel good about it.
I wish in those meetings they would just go, I'm really sorry. This is a business, but you have been yeeted. So we need you to grab your things and head out. Thank you.
I will say that I do feel like with Brian Flores being the new defensive coordinator, if you just look at some of the defensive schemes that he ran, whether he was in New England or in Pittsburgh or when he was head coach in Miami, one of the key traits that was similar between all of them is that he loves to have very physical corners and safeties. And the Vikings, I guess the best way to put it is that they don't really have a lot of those outside of Harrison Smith right now. And so, like, I saw some suggestions, like, Dolphins are cutting Byron Jones. And, like, the Vikings, like, Byron Jones would be a great place for Byron Jones. The problem is because he's going to want top cornerback money. We're already 19 million over the cap. So, like, I think...
Where are you getting that number, by the way, Christian? Because right now for this season, the Vikings have about 15-ish million dollars able to spend within the cap.
Oh, I know that there's been some... it was interesting because I don't really know. I was on Bleacher Report, and I know Bleacher Report's not the best place because it's just a compilation of, like, Twitter accounts, but there were several cap counting accounts from Twitter that it was like following, and so I know it's different calculations, but I don't.
SpotTrack has them at negative $14 million.
Yeah, so about 15,
like estimated amounts. Yeah.
So they're $15 million like over the cap.
No, $15 million under the cap.
No, $15 million over.
That's what I thought.
I think it's $15 over. Yeah,
yeah, it's 15 over.
Yeah, because
it says cap space.
That's
negative.
That's why we're talking about, you know, having to potentially cut or release Zadarius Smith, cut or release Adam Thielen.
We got a ways to go.
Yeah, we got to rework some contracts, do some cuts, do some trades. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not a good thing.
We're not like the Bucks. I mean, the Buccaneers wasn't. No, do they have like close to? Are they close to $50 million over the cap?
They have to just get 11 new players to play offense for them because they just don't have.
I've got the numbers up right here. The numbers you guys are citing are projected numbers if the Vikings void out every year on the rest of the contracts that they are looking to cut or get rid of. So we're looking at things that if everything goes wrong, the Vikings will be $15 million over the cap.
Okay, but is it a little more million? Is it a $30 million swing the other direction?
That number is coming from, so the salary cap for 2023 is $221 million. all contracts right now for 2023 are at $233 million plus $5.75 million in dead cap space.
They are $15 million over the cap. Like, if the season started today, they would be in violation of the cap rules.
All of that said, with that context established, sorry, Dalvin, but
which one?
You have been yeeted.
Which one?
Dalvin Tomlinson.
Well, Dalvin Cook's gone too. All yeah, right.
I'm just saying, like, because with this is specifically free agents, like unrestricted free agents this year for this edition of Keeper Yeet.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of players: Dalvin Cook, Adam Thielen, Harrison Smith,
the
Darius Smith. Who
technically are under contract.
They are under, no, not technically, they are under contract, but could be cap casualties.
Okay, that was one. We got to keep going. Yeah.
This offseason's going to suck.
Are we on the same page now, TJ?
We're on the same page, and I'm not happy about it. I have never been more unhappy to be wrong.
So this one, we've already talked about. All these guys are undrafted free, or not undrafted, unrestricted free agents. Next, Eric Kendricks.
He's already been cut, though.
I mean, it's the end of his contract. You can cut a player, but then bring him back on a lower salary. So, do you bring him back, or is he gone?
I thought they straight cut him, though. They released him.
Well, I think either way, I don't think he's going to want to take a lower salary. I think
he's a premier middle linebacker. He can go anywhere he wants and get a very good contract.
Yeah. I think he's gone. 4-4.
Unfortunately, because I love Eric Kendricks, but he's
good hair, man.
He's got great hair.
Patrick Peterson, Keeper Yeet.
I'm emotionally done with him. Like, when he was brought here, I was like, oh my God, like this guy, man, he used to just lock people up. Like in Arizona, he was just this guy, like he was this leader. He was this dog, and then it was just like, oh, yeah, who was covering him? Oh, that was Patrick Peterson. Like, I was expecting him.
He was sneaky good in some games last year.
So
but my expectations did not align with his performance, and whether that's fair or not does not matter.
It is fair mostly because the Vikings scheme was not made to – he's a very good man quarterback, not very good in zone. Vikings, as we saw – were very heavy in zone defense this last year. When he was in man coverage, he was one of the premier man coverage defensive backs in the league. Problem is, I don't know that we're going to do a whole lot of zone this season, so he's cut. That's a yeet. Because, I don't know what the scheme is going to look like. If we're running base 3-4, zero blitz kind of stuff, we could see more man, but I don't know.
Is Brian?
He's not a blitzing. He's not a blitzing corner.
He's not a blitzer. Oh,
he's 30. He's 32 years old.
Yeah,
that's too old for me. Goodbye.
That's too old.
How much is he making? I can't find his thing.
$4 million.
Well,
yeah, it wasn't like a massive contract.
Yeah,
but
well, I think part of the equation have to be too the fact that the Vikings' top two draft picks, who were a safety and a corner, both got injured midway through
the season.
That's
a big part of it. Yeah.
And so,
neither of them played this year.
So
they were hurt in the preseason.
Like, if the Vikings and Brian Flores believe in those guys coming back from injury and hopefully starting off where they thought they could start in their rookie season, like, does that potentially help alleviate the pain of losing some of these guys?
It alleviates the pain of losing Patrick P. I don't think it alleviates the pain of big man up front or the long-standing top 10 middle linebacker that has been a very consistent part of our defense for a very long time.
Garrett Bradbury, Keeper Yeet.
Oh, if we yeet him, I have to change my fantasy football team name, so that's a keep. Bradbury's swass needs to live on.
For how long the Vikings have been looking for a passable to somewhat decent center, the fact that Garrett Bradbury went from a guy who in his rookie year we were really unsure if he could actually make the cut to being a serviceable center, I don't know. Unless the Vikings are going to go out in the free agent market and pay the top center on the market, I don't see why you'd want to get rid of, because like your options might be worse if you try and draft somebody than him.
Yeah.
I do not use this phrase lightly when talking about players on the Vikings. Garrett Bradbury is a pretty good center. And in my eyes, having a, like, this is my similar argument to why Kirk Cousins give him an extension, because what you know you have and what you have is pretty good, and that's always better than the risk at such a vital position. You have Garrett Bradbury. He's not the best center in the league. He's pretty good. And I would much rather have a pretty good center than the mess that has been the Vikings offensive line for decades.
There is
cheap.
I think it's important, like what we've learned and established just ad nauseum on this podcast, is that pitching in October is, to me, akin to offensive lines and success in football. Like, it is just, you have to have it. You just have to have it. You can get to the Super Bowl, as we saw with the Chiefs a couple years ago, but you're going to get literally eviscerated if you do not have an offensive line.
The two teams in the Super Bowl this year, Eagles, Chiefs, stellar offensive lines.
Yeah.
You go back to the championship games.
The Final Four,
Eagles,
yeah. The
Niners.
Yeah.
Niners were able to run with a literally Mr. Irrelevant because their offensive line was so good.
So I think there's, like, you can get creative with his contract, but that's money you have to spend, I feel like.
Considering also that he has been the center with Kirk Cousins for their entire time here in Minnesota.
And I think a lot of the disappointment that has come around Garrett Bradbury solely stems from the fact that he was a first-round pick. He has not lived up to first-round pick production. If he were a third round pick or a fourth round pick, you'd be like, great, this is awesome. For mid round level production, he is solid. And that's what you expect from rounds 2 through 4. You expect them to be solid contributors throughout the team. And I think particularly as well, because he's been playing good, solid, not great, he was only making, you know, $3.2 million the final year of his rookie deal. You could probably bring him back for not too much more than that as well.
Well, and to keep continuity on the offensive line, I think would be important because, like TJ said, we've been searching for a good offensive line for almost a decade now, and the Vikings have, if Bradbury were to stay, the Vikings have 3 of the 5 positions covered because Christian Darrisaw and Brian O'Neill are one of the best set of tackles in the football.
They're
really
love
good.
Christian Darrisaw around here, you guys. that man's beautiful. But
just a
I 100% agree. Like, we have the Vikings for the first time in my memory since literally 2009. The Vikings had this season, you can quote me on this, a decent offensive line.
And we're just a couple of guards away from making a good.
And you know what? Bring back decent. All right. Let's have a couple of years of decent before we start trying to get too fancy with it. Okay.
I'm here for it.
Let's set a baseline of pretty good before we try getting cute. All right.
Greg Joseph, keeper yeet.
He's ended up being pretty good. I don't think he'd actually be all that expensive either. He misses extra points, it's true. But at the same time, any kicker in Minnesota will do the same. That's a keep.
I think we've also seen the last couple of years, for whatever reason, kickers have something going on. There's like a collective mental breakdown happening among kickers, unless your name is Justin Tucker. Kicker consistency has been all out of whack the last few seasons. And so if you have a kicker who is good, solid to good, don't let him go.
Does it seem, maybe this is just because I like wasn't paying attention when I was younger, but does it seem that average field goals are missed so much more now than they were like in the mid to early 2000s. And maybe it's because the extra point has moved back, but oh my God, it feels like, oh, they're kicking a 40-yard field goal. Like, yeah, that's good. And now it's like, 38. This is kind of a tester. And it's like, how is that a tester? But we've I don't know if you guys feel that, but
we have a lot of big legs that are scattershotting it.
Yeah.
And it's wild. Yeah. We've also seen so many of them hit the crossbar. Statistically speaking, that should not be possible to hit it as often as they are.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's weird, man. And I think the last couple of years, like you were saying, Noah, I think there's something going on.
It's funny that we mentioned that because looking at NFL field goal percentage rate, so just across all teams across the entire season, it has been a general incline, a general increase in percentage made over the last three decades. Back in 1994, teams were converting 78.9% of field goals compared to 85% last season. Over the last 5 years, we've seen it stay fairly consistent around 84-85%. There was a dip in 2019 at 81%.
So
interesting here, it could be that just that kickers are under a lot more scrutiny because when the PAT was moved back in 2015, the years leading up to that, 2010, 99.1% conversion rate, 2012, 99.4%, 2013, 99.5%, 2013, 99.6%, 2014, 99.3%, 2015, when the PAT was moved back, 94.2%. Then it has hovered around 94% ever since then. So kickers are missing more PATs. And so because of that, I believe...
So kickers. We feel like they're missing more, especially now when Greg Joseph misses an extra point, he comes out for a 40-yard field goal, and now we're like, you just missed one from about this range not too long ago. You sure you got this?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And so it's
that makes
it's more perception, like, I think, than everything.
Yes, it's totally observational. But I think you keep him. Like, why would you? We don't need to run down this gauntlet again.
I mean, Robbie Gould's a free agent from the 49ers.
Robbie Gould is 87 years old. He's 87 years old.
And a kicker is maybe the position where it's most true that if you have a pretty good thing going, you stick with it for as long as you can.
It wasn't the Brett Maher incident we saw. In the playoffs.
I don't know what happened there. So,
I think
he's definitely Brett Maher is definitely a yeet. I know we're not doing Cowboys right now, but he's a yeet. Also, just pulling up Greg Joseph's stats from the past season, he was 40 of 46 on PATs, so 6 missed PATs. Not great, but also that's right around league average.
Yeah.
He was 26 of 33 for field goal, 78% or almost 79%. He was perfect within 40 yards. He was...
And that's consistency that you keep.
Right. He was 22 of 23 within 50. He was 4 of 10 from 50 plus. So
he does not he is not
deliver that.
Justin Tucker. And that's fine.
But no one
yeah.
It's okay.
And so I think... If you're the Vikings, you can keep that in mind, just knowing, like, okay, we just need to get it inside the 35-yard line if we're going to kick a field goal.
Having a guy who's automatic inside of 40 is that's phenomenal.
Yeah. Yes. And almost an indictment of the offense, too. Like, why is he kicking that many 50-plus-yard field goals? You know, like, let's go. Get it going here. But anyway, I think keep.
All right, we've got two more. Irv Smith, keep or yeet.
That's hot. That's a yeet, I think.
Yeet.
Yeah, just because, I mean, with Hawk in there now.
So, what, like, Irv Smith is confusing to me.
He's been every single year.
But every time he catches the ball, I'm like, how does this dude not go for 80 yards a game? He's freaking enormous, and he looks so athletic at times. When he catches it, I'm like, how is this dude not...
Well, that was also
and then he drops it four times a game.
He drops.
And he's then, also very, he's he has not had an entire season where he's played.
And it's just like, you look at the, so at least what's like being projected, like he's up there making, or could make like a projected estimate, whatever, based on his stats, up to $10 million. I'm like, dude, get out of here. That's no way.
He is going to be the next Daniel Carlson for the Vikings, where he is just, he has potential. We can see it. He's just not achieving it here. And as soon as he signs with the Raiders, he is going to be the tight end of the week every week in the NFC or AFC.
I think because of that, if I had to choose keeper Yeet, I don't like boiling down more to our priority, nice to have or let walk. I'd say he's a nice to have, because going in, he's going to be 25 years old. He was making $1.5 million this past season. If you could bring him back for something like that.
Could.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, because given his lack of consistency, his lack of production, you're not able to trust him. And this is a deep tight end draft class this year. So I think the market, a lot of people are saying that the market for Dalton Schultz, who is the like kind of the premier free agent tight end this year, could be severely diminished because of the ability to draft tight end. So I think if you could get Irv Smith back for like a 2 or 3 year deal, paying him maybe like $2 million a year or something like that, you can never have too many solid tight ends.
Yeah.
If you can bring Irv Smith back for $2 million a year, sure. If you can have a moderately serviceable tight end for $2 million a year, that's awesome. I'm going to hold my horses until Dalton Schultz signs somewhere, because I need to know how much we're going for here.
Well, so once again, with the tight end class, who knows? Dalton Schultz, what's the tight end tag? Amount. Tight end franchise tag amount.
He would be a nice to have. It's we reduce it to keeper Yeet, so there's not that middle option. And I agree, TJ. I think it's a Yeet.
There are too many because of how
many issues there are with the cap right now, and how many big names and stuff.
And there are too many holes to fill on the team. Like, we also have to remember, just by the fact that the front office is made up of people who have to have these conversations with other people, and time and money is limited. So if we're going to focus on conversations that need to be had and players that need to be signed, the second string tight end is maybe not. Because Hawk is obviously
the Vikings want to be able to keep TJ Hawkinson long term after his contract ends
next year? I would
You'd hope so.
Sure hope
he was
so.
Awesome. He stepped in so immediately. Good. Yeah.
So I think right now the market is set. I agree with all of this too. Bending over backward to try and keep a backup tight end.
Yeah.
Evan Engram signed or was given the franchise tag by the Jacksonville Jaguars for the tight end position. It's $11.34 million. So I think that's
exclusive or non-exclusive?
I believe that's exclusive. And so I think whispers have been that, you know, Dalton Schultz is probably looking somewhere for like 3 to 4 years at like 45 to 50 million. So it looks like the top end tight ends are looking right around the 10 to 12 million a year. Once again, who knows if Dalton Schultz is going to get that in free agency, particularly if a team says, we can get a guy in the draft who's got 5 years of control for, you know, 3 million a year. So if it's the right deal, bring him back. If not, you can find another backup tight end somewhere.
Yeah.
Agreed. Like I said, it's a deep draft. Draft a tight end in the 5th round. All right. And last but certainly not least, Alexander Mattison.
I don't know. I feel like...
Not where I thought you were going.
I don't know. I feel like Alexander Mattison was the kind of runner that Mike Zimmer really wanted to have in his offense. But based on how we saw Kevin O'Connell use him, especially when Dalvin Cook was healthy, I don't know. I feel like if Kevin O'Connell wants to treat the Vikings offense like he did when he was offensive coordinator of the Rams. I just feel like we're going to go a completely different direction and just we're going to draft a couple running backs, plug them in, and see what happens.
We're running into the problem of I would like to keep Alexander Mattison. I think he's pretty good. I think he could be a starter, which is also why I think at his price, the Vikings just aren't going to be able to do it. Because he's going to go get the money for a running back on a two-pronged running back team. He is going to be a part of a two running back scheme, as most teams are doing now. He's not going to be the workhorse back. He's not, you know, Nick Chubb. He's not Christian McCaffrey, but he's a solid 1/2 is what I'll call him. And I don't think that is feasible for the Vikings right now to keep him on as that. They're either going to need him to be their guy, or they're going to have to let him go because they're going to have to pay him like he's their guy.
In my mind, I was thinking he's a 1.5, you know,
yep.
Like he's too good to be a backup, but he's not good enough to be the guy. I mean,
if you give me Elijah Mitchell and Alexander Mattison as a two-pronged running back approach, I would be over the moon.
Yeah. Yes.
But the Vikings can't do that. So
yeah, I think you're 100% correct. He needs to go into like a situation like in Miami, even like in Buffalo has had a thousand.
LA's doing it now.
New England, to some aspects. Yeah. Like it depends on what they do with Dalvin, right? Like if they're going to focus on restructuring and keeping Dalvin as a priority, then Mattison has to go. Like it's just for the money, but also for the, like, he's not really a backup. Like he is Dalvin Cook light. He does what Dalvin does, but is not as good as Dalvin.
He's
so,
not quite as crisp as Dalvin is mechanically.
And he can't make people miss
and
break tackles as well as Dalvin can. So it's
but
just,
he
just
is
not as
too
good.
Good to sit on a bench.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. So I think I think he has to be a yeet. These are a lot of yeets, man.
A lot. Well, I think the Vikings are just in that.
This is going to be a very tough offseason.
Well, and I think Alexander Mattison also just highlights the plight of the running back. I mean, you look, running backs everywhere, for as much punishment as they take, I think probably more so than, I don't know, maybe offensive or defensive linemen are probably the only people who take more punishment on a regular basis than running backs. They're just replaceable. I mean, that's unfortunately, you know, a lot of people's favorite players are running backs, and they're just, unless you've got someone like Christian McCaffrey, you can replace that production. If you look, interesting graphic that I found on Twitter, over the last 14 years, dating back to 2009, sorry, last 13 years, dating back to 2009, no running back for a Super Bowl winning team has made more than $2 million a year. There's only one leading rusher for a Super Bowl winning team in the last 13 years who has made more than $2 million, and that was Percy Harvin for the Seahawks, who made $2.5 million in 2013. I mean, looking this past year with the Chiefs, Isaiah Pacheco, $870,000. Last year with the Rams, Cam Akers, $890,000. The year before that was the Bucks with Leonard Fournette, $2 million. Before that, it was Damian Williams with the Chiefs, $1.05 million. Sonny Michel with the Patriots, $480,000. LeGarrette Blount with the Eagles and Patriots at $900,000 and $760,000.
That contract is so fun.
And then CJ Anderson, $585,000 with the Broncos. Then the Patriots in 2014, again, LeGarrette Blount at $730,000.
That man has such a good career.
Three Super Bowls in 4 years, man. That's pretty good.
Dude, I would have counted him 2 Super Bowls in 1 year, considering he played for both teams.
He deserves a ring. I mean, I think he's got to go. But so this, all of these yeets would then mean that Dalvin stays, Thielen stays, and...
Well, no, because if these are all the free agents.
These are just the
so this does not free up agents. Any cap space.
Yeah, which freaking balls, dude.
Because you still have
so bad.
Slick Rick
kept kicking the can down the road every time he restructured a contract, and we have reached the can. We cannot kick it any longer.
And that's why beyond these unrestricted free agents that Noah has just been listing off here, that's why there are tough conversations that are going to be had around Za'Darius Smith, Harrison Smith, Adam Thielen.
Adam Thielen is probably not going to be a Viking this next season, and I cannot tell you how upset that makes me.
Dude, can I say something?
Go for
He's 100% not going to be on the Vikings next year.
I know.
Like, he is not going to be on the Vikings
next year. I'm so upset about it. I'm going to have to watch a football game where Adam Thielen, Detroit Lakes kid.
I want you
wearing something other than purple and gold, you guys.
I want you to close your eyes.
No, for a second. I'm asking to visualize, and I don't want to do it.
Imagine something for me, just real quick. It's a crisp fall day.
I'm gonna ruin.
We're at East Rutherford, New Jersey.
No. Why?
In the Meadowlands. Suiting up for the New York Jets.
No.
Streaking down the sideline. Adam Thielen tiptoeing into the end zone for a touchdown, catching a beautifully thrown pass from Aaron Rodgers as the Jets lose 35-7.
He gets a touchdown and don't even score.
No, the Jets are capable of scoring a touchdown and only having 3 points.
That would be a Jets thing to do.
That's a very, very Jets thing to do.
If you, I don't know that you could have said a more disgusting sentence than what you have just done.
Adam Thielen on the Packers?
Don't even.
Here's the positive though. Let's be optimists about this. If Adam Thielen's gone, which he 100%, the Q4 podcast is guaranteeing that he will be gone next year. We will not have to hear 2-3 up to 8 times a game that he was an undrafted rookie. He went to a Division III school in Minnesota, and he's
Division
a hometown
two.
Boy.
Division II.
It's the same thing.
I just unplugged my headphones because I lifted my arm. And
you dingus.
Hit my cord, so give me 1 second. That always shocks me. Hi, I'm back.
But we don't have to listen. I love Adam Thielen, but I'm tired of that narrative.
We are
like,
going
oh,
to have
yeah,
to.
He wasn't drafted.
You know what we're going to have to
really
listen
hard.
To now?
Made his dreams come true. Yes,
you know what we're
going
to have to listen to now, Anthony? We're going to have to listen to. We're going to have to sit in a game watching the, I don't know, Geno Smith Seattle Seahawks. And we're going to hear how Adam Thielen from a small town in Minnesota went to D2 school. Undrafted free agent, and the Vikings just let him walk on his way to an MVP season on the Seattle Seahawks.
Because he wants a bunch of money, and he's been the second fiddle ever since Stephon Diggs. And
I know.
He's even become the third fiddle because of Hockenson, and the fourth fiddle because of even like running backs catching the ball out of the backfield.
AJ Osborne took over for his spot several times last
Fifth
season.
Fiddle.
Like, that's the problem. That's the crux of the situation is that the Vikings would absolutely need to restructure his number because his salary and his cap hit next year are $20 million. He's not a $20 million receiver right now.
We have way too much depth in certain positions and nothing elsewhere. Could we convince Adam Thielen to play D-back?
Yeah, just switch to the other side. It can't be that hard.
Free safety.
And Trayvon Diggs was a receiver before he was a defensive back. It can't be that hard, right?
Yeah, he just couldn't catch as well as Stephon, so he played on the other side of the ball.
So think about the value that KJ Osborne brings and the money he requires compared to Adam Thielen.
I'm not even arguing to keep Adam Thielen. It just makes me sad that we can't.
Sure, but it's a reality that we have to face if we want to move forward.
I don't have to face reality. I can live in my own blissful
ignorance
ignorance right now convinced that Adam Thielen will not be leaving the Vikings anytime soon. Even
Mark,
though
you want to put money on it?
I do not. I absolutely would not do that. So we've been recording for a minute now, and we have to laugh about something in baseball. But first, I want to throw this out there that the Minnesota Vikings are single-handedly responsible for Daniel Jones getting his contract.
So in
he's
a way,
signed four years, over $100 million,
$160 million
on a team that did not pick up his fifth-year option on his rookie contract.
And a team that had to franchise tag Saquon Barkley because of that. And I think,
if it was not for a game where he ran for 800 yards and looked like the next greatest quarterback to play the sport.
I cannot believe that we're talking, like, Daniel Jones getting paid $41 million.
Well, did you see him in the playoffs? The dude was mastermind.
Do you know how many passing touchdowns he had last year?
But did you watch him? The playoff pedigree is there. Did you see him in the playoffs? He made the Vikings.
Yeah,
like
I saw him play against the Vikings, worst in the league pass defense, and then the Eagles absolutely trounced them the next week.
But I guarantee the conversation in the manager's office was something along the lines of, I know his stats aren't very good, but we got to the playoffs and he just lit up. We build a team around him, and once we get there, he'll turn it on.
He threw as many touchdown passes in a season as
you don't have to convince
throw in like 5 weeks. Like,
I know he's not good. I'm saying the Vikings are playing. Kevin O'Connell is playing. We're on 9D chess here. All right, we're gonna lose bafflingly bad in the playoffs to make them sign for a high price a quarterback that's not very good. Over the next 3 seasons, the Vikings will not win a Super Bowl, but Kevin O'Connell will slowly deconstruct the cap space of every opponent he plays against by convincing them that their players are better than they are.
Well, I think, too, part of it is quarterbacks are just, you're going to have to break the bank for quarterbacks. Looking, Daniel Jones is the 7th highest paid quarterback in the league right now. There's a pretty steep drop off. So let's say that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Matt Ryan is the 14th highest paid quarterback in the league. And let's throw Brian Tannehill in there as well. So that's like basically the top half of the league.
Yeah.
Ryan Tannehill has the 15th highest salary at $29.5 million. For solid quarterback play, you're going to have to shell out $30 million a year.
Especially now that we've had the Deshaun Watson fully guaranteed massive contract. Every quarterback without 30 pending lawsuits is going to say, where's my money? I'm not at risk of going to jail. I'm also not a terrible human being. So I should be getting $30 million a year. Guaranteed.
Yeah.
Well,
the Lamar Jackson situation right now. Mm-hmm. He's getting franchise tagged because he wants a fully guaranteed, because he watched Deshaun Watson walk, literally not guaranteed that he wouldn't be in federal prison by the end of the season. And he walked into Cleveland and they said 5 years, all guaranteed. And Lamar Jackson
$30 million.
Lamar Jackson is saying, and I totally understand his position. Where's that for me? A guy who's not
MVP.
An MVP, and who's also not just like a gross guy, as far as I know.
Patrick Mahomes is on a 10-year, $500 million contract, and he's the 5th highest paid quarterback in the league by average annual value. I mean, it's just, I think there are some people who do not belong at their position on the list. Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, and Deshaun Watson are the top four.
Russell Wilson deal also broke the quarterback market.
Yeah. I mean, all those guys. But like, you think you're not listing right there. You're not listing people who we list off as the top five quarterbacks.
And,
you know what I mean?
And well, guys who the quarterback market's going to get even weirder over the couple of years, because Justin Herbert, Jalen Hurts,
Joe Burrow,
Tua,
another one. Yeah. Yeah.
Those guys are all coming up on contract years. And Tua, in my opinion, should stop playing football, but just for his personal safety, because I like him as a person and I don't want to see him keep stumbling off a field in a concussed stupor. I don't know what it is about him. He's just not built to take it, and I don't want him to keep doing it. I think he's really good, but that's my tangential opinion here. Tua, please, for your own safety.
But all of that to say that Daniel Jones making $40 million a year, laughable. Yeah. Yes. Does he deserve $40 million? Probably not. Yeah. But I mean, $30 million a year is not that much less. And that's just what you have to pay for solid quarterback play. I mean, that's what Daniel Jones gives you. He gives you solid quarterback play with a mild dual threat option,
which is mild. Like totally so weird to think about. Like you just said, the top 15 or what, 28, 29 plus, like that's crazy. That's like significant percentages of your cap space for one dude. Yeah. And in some cases your dude is like Matt Ryan. Like that's nuts.
I mean, some of the names on this list, you got Ryan Tannehill, you've got Matt Ryan, you've got, I don't know where our opinions on Matt Stafford are at this point. Jared Goff,
still positive.
Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, and then obviously you got your Patrick Mahomes thrown in there. You've got Kirk Cousins in there. You've got Lamar Jackson in that list as well. But it is funny because a lot of the best quarterbacks in the league are on their rookie deal still. So the quarterback market's going to get bonkers.
It's going to get very weird. Very fast.
To your point, TJ, I want to. I think Cowboys fans need to thank Vikings fans, because now that Daniel Jones is making the same amount of money as Dak Prescott, Dak Prescott's contract looks like a steal of a deal.
Does it? No, I'm just kidding. 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 I'm just kidding.
Ooh, that'll be next week. Because we have to hit our final topic for today, which is. That the I'm just gonna lead it off with the news story, the latest on the unfolding developments. The MLB has signed 3 former executives from the Bally Sports Network in their logistics and operations department, specifically because the MLB is fully prepared, not as in like they're hoping that it happens, but fully prepared as in it's going to happen in their mind, that as of March 31st, Diamond Entertainment, whatever that parent company calls themselves, is going to collapse in on itself. They have already informed teams that they will not be paying them their broadcast rights for this season. And as of March 31st, the MLB will own the rights to streaming with no blackout restrictions.
Well, and I think those hirings are... spring training, opening day is 3 weeks away from the time that we record this. Like MLB
today,
As Christian has said, they have to have something. MLB cannot afford to not have games broadcast this season. After everything they've gone through over the last couple of years, you need something. So if you're going to try and put together broadcast packages, media streaming rights deals with different companies, if you're going to put that together, you need people. And who knows, maybe this is a sign that Major League Baseball is like, we'll just do it ourselves. And maybe they're trying to build up a solid infrastructure to do that long term. Either way, this is a big step forward in saying MLB is like, okay, we're going to change things here. Things are changing now.
And at least it's baseball. At least it's like a, maybe this is wrong, but like it can't get worse than this. So like, we're just going to do it. We're just going to get it out of the way. We're just going to get something out to everyone. I think the complaints about like, I think it's going to be obvious to us, but the complaints about like, oh, viewership's going down, like people aren't watching baseball anymore. Well, now that everyone is able to, I think it's a natural prediction to say that, yeah, probably more people are going to watch. So I think it's going to be the start of a positive trend for MLB, just in the growth of the game aspect.
It'll be interesting to see how they navigate the first couple of years, because there are a lot of people who have not liked exclusive streaming on Amazon, on Facebook, on YouTube. And so creating an atmosphere or an environment where it's easily accessible, particularly for older viewers, people who have traditionally relied on cable to watch baseball. Granted, everything is moving. I was about to say everything's moving towards streaming like it was 2014. Everything is digital.
Y'all heard
now.
About this Netflix thing.
What am I plussing my Disney for? I mean, what?
I mean, I know I'm sure you've either thought about it or would think or agree with me when I say this, that, you know, my grandparents, who are huge Cardinals fans and watch every game on TV, I guarantee you if it moves away from their traditional cable network and they have to get an app or get a certain streaming box, they would have to get a new smart TV, or they would have to like call you or I on the phone several times to say, how do I work this box to get the Cardinals games on
just
TV?
The one time I had Grandma Brown call me asking how to watch a Cardinals game on YouTube.
I can only imagine.
Imagine, if you will, non-exclusive streaming rights. Imagine the MLB lets people watch the game no matter what platform they're using. Whether you're on YouTube TV, cable, Hulu, or any of the wide variety of live TV options that are available to this,
I think,
this common audience. Imagine if anywhere I am, if there is a package that includes the rest of the channels that are widely available on cable and streaming, that there is also a channel broadcasting baseball. As there would be something along the lines of, I don't know, the NBA.
Because streaming is the way everything is going.
But the thing with the streaming is that you can stream live TV.
Yes.
Like the NBA does.
Yes.
I can go on TNT on any given night, and
but
I can
there
watch
are still, there basketball. Are still plenty of traditional cable customers who might be out of luck, at least for this year and the
next
couple of years.
Because you can do that on cable, too.
No, because the thing, because cable, one of the reasons why we're in this whole mess to begin with is because declining viewership and declining cable subscribers is why cable companies are refusing to pay the fees that the MLB and the sports leagues are requesting for broadcast rights. And if there's no money to be made there, they're not going to do it. Like streaming is much easier to put on and less expensive to put on. Cable,
imagine
you have to
now, if you will, Comcast ceases to be a thing. And all of America is across the board 12% happier.
All I'm saying is that there are still plenty, especially like Noah mentioned, older baseball fans who still rely on their traditional cable and satellite subscriptions, who are going to be very, very loath to switch to any kind of streaming platform. And because right now there's no indication that, like, because baseball's prepared to go broadcast the games themselves this year if they have to, but it's mostly going to be on an exclusively streaming platform, because to put it on cable TV would require negotiating contracts with cable companies, and those things cannot. There's no way that's going to come together in less than a month. There's just no way.
So that, I think that is a very hopeful idea for down the line for this season. It's going to be messy.
But messy is going to be better than what it's been. You know,
it has to get worse before
it gets
clean and inaccessible.
Yeah, messy and baseball is better than clean and no baseball.
Like, for this season, there's a good possibility my grandparents, again, diehard Cardinals fans, may not be able to see any Cardinals games on TV this year.
Or maybe we just take a trip down to St. Louis and help them figure it out.
Help them set up MLB TV.
Like Noah and I are covered. We got our MLB.TV free from T-Mobile coming up in 3 weeks.
But what I'm saying here is just that it's easier to help an older person set up MLB TV than it is to watch baseball where it doesn't exist.
That's fair.
Agreed.
And I feel really happy for the people of Iowa, for the people in states where all five or six nearest teams to them are blacked out. And if they want to watch baseball in Iowa, they've got to watch the Colorado Rockies or the Baltimore Orioles or the New York Yankees.
If you're in Kentucky and Tennessee, you're blacked out from the Cardinals, the Reds, and the Braves.
But it makes no sense that you're not able to watch Marlins teams that are close to you.
Ugh.
And particularly, Iowa has a Cubs minor league affiliate, and the fact that you can't watch the Cubs,
sucks so much. I know that there will be angry fans this season. I know it's not going to be all grins and rainbows for everyone, but I'm just glad the system is burning to the ground because it means we can build something better in its ashes.
It had to happen, and at least in this way, it's more of a controlled collapse than an outward just natural collapse, because baseball could ill afford to have any kind of collapse.
Yeah, a natural collapse would mean the end of the MLB. Let's just be real. If we let this take its natural course, the MLB is pretty much done within 20 to 30 years.
But there's no striking coming with it. Like, there's no players wanting this, owners wanting that. Like, at least this is best case scenario.
And a certain media conglomerate.
I really want to provide a four-letter sentiment to my former employer, but
tune in next week to hear that.
Tune in next week to hear our true opinions.
Hashtag suck FinClair.
I think there are owners who've been interviewed in the past couple weeks about the situation going on, and a lot of them are saying the same things, that this is hard, this is not ideal, but it had to happen, and in the end, however long it takes, baseball and the local markets will be better off for it. It's just, it's going to be messy and complicated for the next 2 to 3 years. That's just...
Messy and complicated is the alternative title for this podcast, so we know... From experience, we can make it work.
True. Before we wrap it up, I just want to get quick opinions. So it's been a couple weeks. We've seen some preseason ball with the new MLB changes. I'm just going to go out and say this. This is maybe a hot take. I think the pitch clock is great. I think it's great because it creates creativity. Like the whole Max Scherzer thing that he's doing, I love it, because guess what? In other sports, like in basketball, like in football, where there is some sort of like play clock or shot clock or something, like there's manipulation of that that is strategic. Like, oh my gosh, there's 38 seconds left. I'm going to shoot before 24 seconds so that I can at least get the ball back one more time. Like, I'm not going to hike the ball before 1 second on the play clock because we want... all of the time.
I'm Bill Belichick, so I know the rule that when you get a delay of game, it doesn't necessarily stop the actual game clock. Well, so I'm just going to keep taking them and move back 30 yards and the game's going to end.
Yeah, like that's great. I like it.
And for me, I think the most important thing, I was listening to a podcast earlier this week and they made a good point that the most important thing that's come up with the pitch clock is that the umpires and MLB right away during spring training said there's going to be no grace period. Like, we are going to enforce this. This is how it's going to be. Like, there was one of the first spring training games of the spring season. A Red Sox Braves game ended in a 6-6 tie in the bottom of the ninth. It was bases loaded, and the batter didn't get set before the clock ran out, and it was an automatic strike three. Game was over, because they don't do extra innings in spring training. And that's good, because in baseball, I think what they're committed to is like, they can't change the rule. They can't change the enforcement of the rule late in games, playoffs. You can't do it. Like, if it's going to be a rule that sticks, You have to enforce it all the time. If like this year, I can see it happening right now. If game 7 of the World Series ends on an automatic ball 4 and automatic strike 3, people are going to lose their minds, but it was enforced. It was a violation. Like if game 7 of the World Series ends on that kind of call, that's the way it grabs hold and stays in baseball. Because you can't enforce it for one part of the game or one part of the season and then not enforce, like, has to be in effect the whole entire time. And so the fact that they're doing that right away in the first spring training game, a game ended on an automatic strike 3, that's really important because now it is showing the players like this is serious. Like you can't mess around with it.
Yeah.
To me, it seems like buying a new pair of shoes where when you first get in the shoe, it's very rigid and fits your foot maybe a little too tightly, like it's squeezing in the little spots. But over the long run, you know, as you break it in a little bit, it starts to get more comfortable and it gives just a little bit so that it fits your foot perfectly. Whereas here with the implementation of the rules, if umpires already started kind of loosey-goosey, there's nowhere to go but just to get looser. Whereas here, if it is... Exactly. Yeah. Until you have the loosiest and the goosiest of rules. But the shoe is new right now. It is tight. It is rigid. Umps are giving no leeway whatsoever. As players start to get more comfortable, as there starts to be a natural rhythm to the game, I do see a possibility of, you know, like, if, like, there, on that example that Christian gave, you know, batter was not set with 8 seconds left. If I can see maybe a scenario, you know, in August or September, where if the batter is in the box and he's looking down and his head is coming up at 7.5 seconds, I can be like, okay, the ump's probably like, okay, cool, let it go. But you can't have those little grace periods in the rules if you don't start with strictly enforced rules. Now that we're getting that strictly enforced, I think it opens the door for a little bit more natural implementation.
And there are going to need to be some tweaks done because we've already seen this. It's already seen, you know, with 2 weeks into spring training, that there are areas for improvement where the batter has to be ready to go, engaged with the pitcher with 8 seconds left on the clock. But there have been times where the batter has to then stand there for 5 or 6 seconds because the catcher is not set ready to accept the pitch from the pitcher. And so, like, there's been talk about, let's make the 8 second rule actually, like, the catcher has to be set along with the batter. Like, because why does the batter have to be set and not the catcher? So it's just things like that that I think as we go along, there might be some, because the good thing about this too is that during spring training, there's been a very nice open communication flow between managers, umpires, players, and the league office, where they're always constant. Like after every game so far this spring, the umpires have been giving debriefs to the managers. But hey, just so you know, in this situation that we had in the game, you know, the batter was given an automatic strike because of this reason, or the pitcher was given an automatic ball because of this reason. So the managers know why their players are getting violations, and they can know how to teach the rule to their players. So I think this is something that hopefully as we go through more spring training, we still have, you know, about 3 weeks left. This will hopefully get ironed out enough where we won't, because I can just see it now. I don't want any game or any critical moment in whether a regular season or a playoff game. I don't want it to be decided by this. It seems wrong to have this be a reason why a game could be altered. But also, at the same time, them's the rules.
And the idea of watching the Yankees lose a playoff series because of a rule technicality, that makes my heart very happy.
Yankees lose a playoff series on an automatic strike 3, or are they given automatic ball 4 for a bases loaded walk?
Inject that into my veins.
Sweet, sweet things to hear.
Hashtag Romo 2020. Hashtag Anthony should choose the Vikings. Hashtag Teddy's job. Hashtag spoof for boof. Hashtag Kevin. Hashtag Minshew man. Hashtag jolt the bolts. Hashtag cop bostas. Hashtag kiss Carter. Hashtag plug me in. Hashtag heck off Stan. Hashtag WTF WFT. Hashtag Bill the Puma. Hashtag it wing. Hashtag chow. Hashtag hire Jacob Schneider. Hashtag ham sandwich. Hashtag Basu bass cocker. Hashtag Ohio does exist. Hashtag I didn't need a hold on. Let's pause. Hashtag fix the mic for Mike. Hashtag who's your bad wagon.
hashtag PJ Fleck Elite, hashtag Quick Trip with two C's, hashtag Girth, hashtag Craig, hashtag Juice It, hashtag Herberted, hashtag How Dare Us.
I feel like you need to have a hand motion, Noah, when you say that. You gotta go hashtag Girth.
What? I'm a little upset.
If I hold my phone and just do like
Girth. Yeah,
I understand that it's a bit crass, but I loved earlier in the show when we had the hashtag suck hard for Bedard.
Nope, it's not happening.
Nope, not a thing. Hashtag juiciest though. Hashtag Luciest and Juiciest.
I've been a regular contributor to the show now for several months, and I don't have one of my own hashtags on this bit.
None of us have any of our own hashtags on this bit. This is organic.
These come up organically.
But this was the first time I used a hashtag, and
that's an existing hashtag. We don't want to use it,
Christian. Yeah. We appreciate it, but it's against our bylaws to allow.
We can't have a pre-existing.
We
can't have pre-existing hashtags.
We can't have a useful hashtag that gets us involved in a conversation that someone else is having.
We need hashtag Build the Puma.
We are building our own echo chamber here.
Like, people will know what that means. We can't have that. We need to have hashtag It Wing.
What does It Wing mean? I don't know. It Wing. One.
What I do know is It Wing.
Hashtag Kiss Quarter. Do you have any idea the context of hashtag Kiss Carter?
So is the only reason that one of my catchphrase that we had on Offside Sports all the time when I said Cowboys suck is the only reason why that won't ever be included is because you are a Cowboys fan and you wouldn't dare say that coming out of your own mouth?
No, I left that in Offside Sports all the time.
The thing about the Q4 hashtag, all right, is one, it has to be universally enjoyable.
Yes.
There is not a single one of our listeners that does not appreciate hashtag Girth.
Hashtag Girth.
All right. Okay. Hashtag plug me in is.
I can only think of two listeners. Well, one listener and one member of the show that wouldn't like Cowboys Suck.
No. Stop it. You can't force this.
Because that also then falls into the previous discussion of that is an outside thing.
And it's not organic.
And it's also mean-spirited.
It needs to come about in the conversation itself.
And it needs to bring joy.
The hashtag is formed not out of a sentiment. It is formed from
out of a moment
said. Out of a moment. You know, hashtag Bill the Puma.
This conversation has been very enlightening because I did not know quote unquote how the sausage was made when it came to these hashtags. So I'm really glad that we've kind of established.
What can I say? Every other Thursday we're just here making sausage.
That's all we do.
Hashtag
man.
Girth.
Well, from all of us here at the Q4 podcast. Thank you for making it to the end of this one. If you're even still here, I have my doubts, but thanks. We'll see you next time.